Well, you're in tune to Freeform listener-sponsored radio, WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org. My name is Fabio, and live in the studio with me this evening, right here, are Throbbing Gristle. I'll introduce them. Genesis Briar Piorge has been here several times over the years.
That's true.
But never in this context, so this is a whole new thing for us. Cozy Fani Tutti. How do you like it pronounced? Is it Cozy Fan Tutti or is it Cozy Fani
Tutti.
Okay. We have Peter Christofferson.
Also known as Sleazy.
Hello. We'll get to that later. And Chris Carter at the end. You don't have any kind of pseudonym or like funny name or anything like that?
Only at home.
You need to speak into the microphone, I'm sorry.
My name's Chris Carter.
Okay. I see. Saboteurs to the very end. To the very end, right?
What on earth are you saying already?
So, this is a momentous occasion for all of us, at least for WFMU.
The very first time to have all of Throbbing Gristle on the east coast of America ever.
Really? Is that true?
Absolutely.
Well, I know you've never played here before, but...
we've never all been here at one time, have we? I don't believe so.
Wow, this is exciting. So are you excited to play in New York? Brooklyn, actually.
Yep.
Brooklyn.
We've got
that bit of paper with where we're playing. We've lost it.
Well, you're playing. I know you're playing at the Masonic Temple in Brooklyn. It's in Fort Greene, I believe. And Genesis is rummaging through some itinerary or such thing. So, okay, so you're playing at the Masonic Temple in Brooklyn and at the Poisson Rouge in Manhattan on Friday.
Correct.
Actually, we're excited to be playing. We're excited to be alive, to be honest.
We made it this far.
Were there issues as far as that's concerned?
Always.
Well, I'm amazed that after 30-some-odd years, you actually are here together and are going to perform in New York. I still can't believe it. It's kind of an amazing thing for many people.
Maybe you died and went to heaven, Fabio.
Well, maybe. Never know. This could all be an illusion. Let's go back a little bit. Let's rewind. So the band formed in what, the 74 or so, 75?
75.
And you came out of another project called, how did you pronounce it, Coombe?
Right.
Coombe Transmissions? So one thing I was always curious about is, like, why do a new thing called Throbbing Gristle when a lot of the same ideas that you were doing with Coombe Transmissions are basically present there?
Because it didn't come out of Coombe, actually.
It didn't?
No. It was a completely new thing, independent of Coombe, and that was the whole point of it.
Okay. Also, I stand corrected.
Yeah.
Although the same people were involved, it was very much a question of wanting to reach a new audience, wanting to reach a different... age group, a different class of people altogether. With the art world at that time was reserved for artists and for professors and for the rich people. And there was a strong feeling amongst us that we wanted to get to the ideas that we had into a more general kind of music market or youth market. And so we reconfigured.
Well, that's interesting because you say music market, because from what I understand, Throbbing Gristle was, to quote some obscure interview somewhere, you said that, someone said, maybe it was you, it wasn't so much about music, but it was about information. Am I correct in that?
Yeah,
but that was one aspect of what we were doing. But where there's a link is probably in strategies. For example, Cozy, especially, and myself have been involved a lot with male art.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and to some degree sleazy, and then Coombe in itself as an entity had. So we took a lot of those ideas from Fluxus, mail art, and so on in terms of strategies and propaganda and merchandising, and applied those to the idea of the rock band, but the rock band, as Sleazy says, reconfigured into non-musicians with an attitude and with some sort of message, something to discuss rather than just entertainment.
Right. Well, certainly it wasn't just about entertainment. You were going to say something?
Yeah, because then we also took the music business strategies as well and skewed them to our own needs. Mm-hmm. So we played around with both art world and the music business techniques. And we were just, we did it and we enjoyed it when it was fun. But it was sort of serious intent as well.
So you, as a collective, claim to have a mission, so to speak. So after all these,
so did Jim Jones.
Right. So after all these years, how do you feel about what you wanted? What you did then, as opposed to what you want to do today? How is it? How does it differ? I mean, in terms of the music, in terms of the message, if there is a message. Are we putting you to sleep, Jen?
No, that's me thinking hard in old age. Focusing the brain, listening.
We were just listening to the tracks you've just been playing downstairs, and we were amazed to find how similar the tracks we did 30 years ago and the ones we do now sound to each other, because somehow we thought we were doing something that was in a way quite different. But because the music comes from directly from the backs of our minds rather than from the front, in a way, it's a much truer expression of the people that we are and what we do.
So what you're saying is the chemistry, whatever was there 30 years ago, the same chemistry applies today.
Exactly.
Whether you want it or not.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what happens.
The tools that we use might be different. The technology might be different, but the instinct comes from the same source.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the way things are recorded today? I mean, obviously, back then you were limited by the technology you had. Today it's a very different situation, and just hearing the new recording, I mean, it's a lot cleaner sounding, all that kind of stuff. You have professional studio availabilities. So
no.
Not really? At all. We don't use them at all.
But so what, you recorded this in the bedroom or something?
Basically.
Chris is the technical wizard.
The technical wizard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you recorded it in your studio?
Yeah.
Well, in any case, it sounds a lot cleaner and a lot, you know.
That's possibly because of technology that we have now. You can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, sleep is waiting.
It's okay.
Most people with a decent knowledge of electronics and computers can do a decent recording in their bedroom or in their, you know, on their own. You don't have to go to a regular
commercial
studio to get a decent sound.
Well,
you have to have the knowledge.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but 30 years ago, you had also a situation where you basically started the kind of independent trend of recording and releasing music, which wasn't really done much in those days, except for punk rock records. And today, it's a very different situation, right? I mean, people record their stuff, and they put it up on the web, and it's out there, right? So how do you feel about this shift in the way things get out there, and do you feel it's affected the quality of what's getting out there?
Yeah, it bypasses the quality control, I think, at times.
Because it's too easy?
Yeah. I think that's been a problem with music a lot since the mid-70s, is that as it got easier, more of it arrived and more of it wasn't really worthy of being there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. People tend to sort of think because they can work a computer and they can use the software that's enough, and it's not enough. You have to give yourself to it and use the technology rather than the technology just present itself and be used as music, because it isn't.
Right. Right.
I think it's partly to do also with the ease with which it's possible to make your own records now.
Mm.
If in the 70s, even though we were recording on cassette machines or on a quarter inch or whatever, it still took time to develop the sound we were making, or to think about it and record, you know, like tape sounds, or to come up with ideas for songs and stuff. And the time that it used to take meant that you abandoned, you know, a lot of ideas in the refinement process of the job in hand of the project. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, you know, you can, in GarageBand or something, you can put together something that sounds relatively professional in about 42 seconds. And so,
and then put it out there, which right, means that right. there's no filtering,
right,
there's no consideration about
right.
whether or not it speaks a story, whether or not it's the best it could be, whether it could be arranged and done differently, mixed differently, approached differently, etc. We would meet every weekend, and Friday, Saturday, Sunday for a year or so, and then still ongoing through TG, we would jam
mm-hmm.
and record as much as we could, and then spend the evenings listening back to those tapes and going, that bit we like, maybe we can do that twice. Can we recreate that sound or not? Mm-hmm. And then from that, we would refine down, as Sleazy says, to our favorite hour or so of noise and rhythms, and then say, well, are there any stories we want to tell? What would they be? Who would they be about? Who are they for? Who's going to listen?
Mm. A lot of the time as well was spent when we were jamming like that, was getting to a state as we were playing where we all felt good at the time. If it made you feel good, it was a good starting point for then expressing something further or Jen to put lyrics onto. So it wasn't just a case of, oh, that sounds good and we can make a track out of that. It was, that feels good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was as much about feeling as about the sound that we generated as well, because mm-hmm. that really, for me, was more what it was about.
Right.
I think the training, if you could say that we had any training at all, it was not musical training, it was a training to put ourselves in a particular mental state when we play. And as a consequence of spending 4 or 5 years learning how to do that and learning to put ourselves in the state that we are when we're on stage, it didn't matter that we stopped for 25 years or whatever it was, 23 years. We could come back, and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The methodology of putting yourself in that state remained ingrained.
Right. Speaking of which, like, there was a long period where, I don't know if you all sort of didn't want to deal with one with each other, or what exactly caused the, you know, sort of separation of church and state or whatever it was. But at a certain point,
I'm gonna be the Pope.
But at a certain point, you decided why to come back to redo.
Is that guy's fault?
This guy's fault.
He's
pointing to Paul Smith over there. And what, he offered you a big chunk of money or something? Or a gold bracelet, you know?
His silver tongue.
A case of wine? So really it was instigated by Paul? Like, he really put you all back in touch with each other?
Yeah, and I think over the years it became very obvious to us all that TG had become bigger than what had made it stop years ago, really, and that we owed it to each other and TG and everybody else in some ways to actually take hold of the whole concept of it and make sure that its legacy stayed intact
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the way we
it's
wanted
incredibly
it to.
That's
all right.
I was just going to say, it's incredibly annoying to find that something from such a long time ago, of, you know, such a long time ago in one's history, in
mm-hmm.
one's past,
mm-hmm.
remains much more popular than what we're doing now.
You always say things like that. You're so weird.
Speak for yourself.
Well, I mean,
we're very pleased that it does.
Oh, that's the apology at the end.
Well,
it sounds like we drag sleeves, kicking
it.
And
I'm
screaming.
Finished with this again.
Well, how do you feel about the fact that TG has influenced so many, many artists, you know, musicians, bands, whatever, over the last 30 years? I mean, from the very earliest days. And then, of course, throughout the 80s and into the 90s, there were many, many, many bands and artists that were affected and influenced. And you read it all the time. Oh, yeah, well, I'm a big fan of TG. I mean, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, you know, big fan of TG. I mean, like many, many, many bands have mentioned this. So how do you feel about your progeny, as it were?
Personally, I'm still not used to being, seen as the godfather of. Well, I think we've all had that. We've all had that experience recently. You know, people coming up to us and say, "Oh, you changed my life," blah blah. If I could be the fairy godfather, that would be okay.
So you don't see that you really did any had any, I don't know, impact on music.
I think we acknowledge that. Maybe some of the ideas that we had, or some of the rejection of dead forms that we made all that time ago, possibly helped other people to reject those forms and come up with new ones, which has got to be a good thing. So we do acknowledge a little bit in a kind of modest way, but.
We don't easily take compliments, do we?
It's hard because we're brought up, even as children, to easily respond to criticism, negative criticism, and people saying bad things about you. You get used to it. You learn how to deflect it or make fun of it.
Well,
but compliments are really hard to deal with. You know, what are you supposed to say? Oh, yes, actually, I am really brilliant. Thanks so much. And now suck my dick. You know?
What kind of a society is it where you can be walking through the shopping mall with your 3-year-old kid and it's okay to shout at him, you know, you're completely useless, you'll never amount to anything, but it's not okay to pick him up and hug him.
Mm.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
Where's that come from?
Well, what we were just saying, you know, that it's difficult to accept the
negative comments are much more prevalent in our society than positive ones.
Well, yeah, it's
more acceptable.
It's like the line they use in journalism: "If it bleeds, it leads." Mm. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Didn't know that one, but
well, it's
the bottom line is that there's no question that from TG came Industrial Records. And the slogan "Industrial Music for Industrial People," and a very different, completely different approach to how to construct what was seen as rock, popular, avant-garde, now indie music, and that's you can go anywhere in the world now: Russia, Cambodia, Tokyo, Africa, everywhere, and there's industrial music sections in the shops. There's T-shirts of Nine Inch Nails. There's this a global movement.
Sure, sure.
Which may or may not acknowledge that it began in this tiny place in Hackney with these eccentrics saying, why the hell not? So it's a strange phenomena to even observe, never mind take responsibility for. Plus, it's like jazz. It's just it's grown and changed into all these different pathways.
Well, from the very beginning, it kind of mutated fairly quickly into as the early 80s
but
evolved.
Because of that mutation, we're not really responsible. We end up being only responsible for TG again.
Well, yeah, you're not responsible for the rest of the world's actions, but you have influenced many people and whatever, just like William Burroughs influenced you, you know, and various other people, you know, the Fluxus and the Austrian actionists and what have you. Right, so there is like you know a history and a precedent, and then the influences go on from there.
But what we're saying is really that TG ends up after all these years, just back with itself, doing as Cozy said, music because we find that chemistry still exciting and interesting, and we still discover things that we haven't discovered before, sonic things, sound combinations, word combinations that still find we find them challenging and interesting.
Yeah. Well, we speaking of which, we heard from your soon to be released new album, The Third Mind Movements. Which tell me about it. When is it coming out?
Tomorrow.
Do you know? Tomorrow. Is that
It'll
true?
It'll be first on sale.
It's not coming out. It's for sale on
the
tour.
Oh, it's for sale on tour. No, it's not coming out in the States at all.
No.
Why would we want to release it on an American label?
I don't know. Maybe your fans would want to hear it.
Yeah, they should come to the show and buy it there.
Okay, well, for those of you listening, if you want to get the new album, for the time being, maybe someday it'll be released in the States, but for the time being, it'll be available at the shows. And is it going to be released in England, in Europe?
We don't know at the moment.
Oh, this is a tour-only thing
at
the moment. Wow, okay. Well, we heard one track off of that, the called Premature, I believe. Do you want to say anything about this new album, this new recording, anything at all? No? No? Okay.
We're not.
No, I don't think so.
How about this? We take a short break. We'll play another track off of this. And when we come back, we'll take some calls on the air.
Sure.
You're into
sounds
that?
Good.
Okay, so for anyone listening, 201-200-9368 is the studio line. You can call in and you can ask the band yourselves whatever you want. Well, I don't know if they'll answer whatever they... but 201-200-9368. We're going to go and go back to the album, and we're going to hear... What is it? Track 4. What is this? Perception is the Only Reality. Okay. From the new... hopefully soon to be released.
On sale on this tour album.
Okay. All right. Okay, you heard it from
go
the band.
Go to Coachella and buy one.
No, you can't buy them.
Oh, that's the one place they can't get them. Oh, there you go.
Okay, well.
So, perverse to the end.
To the very end, yes. Okay, let's listen to this, and when we come back, we'll take calls on the air with the band, okay? Here's Throbbing Gristle. Well, we're saying sounds really good on the headphones, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Quite spooky.
Yeah.
So we're going to attempt this way out kind of phone demon kind of thing. 201-200-9368. If you want to call in and speak directly to the band, now's your chance, or forever hold your peace.
Don't be shy.
They won't bite you.
No.
They're actually quite pleasant. 201-200-9368. Let's see.
That's because we've already wrecked civilization.
Yeah.
Yes, the wreckers of civilization. That is such an odd statement. We're listening to... What is this? Perception? Perception is the Only Reality. So I take it the title has some reference, some significance to...
us.
Okay, I won't take that any further. Have you done shows in Europe just recently? I know you've been done shows. No, you haven't. So this is like, is this the beginning of the tour or what?
Correct. Correct.
Uh-oh, that's a bad sign. Oh, no.
Yes, this is the beginning of the tour.
So is actually the first show in New York? Is this the first
tomorrow.
Show? Really? Oh, wow, that's exciting. Are you all excited about this?
We are very excited.
That's why we're all keeping ourselves waist below the top of this table.
there's all sorts going on underneath this table.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm not going to touch
you
that.
You walked into that.
I'm not going to touch that. I'm not going to touch it. 201-200-9368. 201-200-9368. Let's see. Is there somebody on the line here?
Talk to me.
I think that's Genesis on the line, isn't it?
No, that's not it.
Can't tell with us. It could be the music. Subliminals.
Normally we don't know who's playing what when we play live, you know, like we're going, is that you?
Hello?
And now you've got the same problem with the phones.
Is there anybody there?
Hello? Are you there?
Yeah.
I'm
sorry.
wedding tone. Nothing like it.
Oh my God, this is a nightmare.
Oh, it's my phone. Someone rang me up.
Another day in the world is.
Tell them they've got the wrong number. They should be ringing the station.
Yeah, it could be me with this nonsense. What's that? Are you getting anything?
So Jen's getting all the calls.
There's a dead call. You picked it up just as I was hanging it up.
Oh, okay. Well, the phone line is acting up. 201-200-9368 is the number to call if you want to speak with the band. This is your chance.
They're scared of us.
They are. I think they're very scared of you. Where are we here with this recording?
Perhaps you should play some music and regather your thoughts, Fabio.
Yes. Well, we have more music from your album in the background. (201) 200-9368 is the number to call if you want to speak with the band live in the studio. They're waiting for your call.
I guess there's no one out there.
Let's talk a little bit about the audience, shall we? How do you feel about the audiences today? I mean, you did shows in what, 2004, 2006, right? So was there any difference that you saw or felt from the audiences as opposed to when you were doing shows in 77, 76, that sort of thing?
I think way back then, we were more scared.
You were more scared.
Yeah. Because I can distinctly remember, you know, having a serious discussion whether we should have, you know, like...
Sleazy was scared.
Security.
We three.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Were the audiences
A number
violent?
Of times in the 70s, the audiences were very violent.
That's true.
No, that is true.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were they attacking you directly or just themselves
freaking
out?
They were trying to kill us.
They were trying to get us off the stage.
We always got on the stage expecting violence.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to be confronted by skinheads or anyone else that just wanted to fight with us because of what we did. Yeah. Other bands.
The thing is, it was without precedent.
Well, I mean, do you think that it might be because of the subject matter or the type of thing you were doing that they expected, they thought that you expected them to behave this way?
No, there's a
classic example. We were invited to do something at the Architectural Association in London.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we'd make it architectural in theme. And we found a courtyard in the back that was surrounded by buildings. So we made a cube of scaffolding and put the stage there and then covered it in tarpaulins, like on the back of a truck.
Mm-hmm.
And we had cameras in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to see us play, you had to stay in the buildings and look at these TV monitors, but we didn't have the sound turned up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to hear us play, you had to hang out of the windows or go up on the roof and so on and look down. But you couldn't be an audience and get both.
I see.
And there was a riot. They went nuts. They were throwing things down and trying to they smashed through the doors to get to the stage.
Well, it's like you confused them.
Yes.
Their role as an audience member was totally destroyed
by
the way we presented ourselves.
Right.
And that manifested in violence towards us, basically. I mean, as Kumi and Jen had sort of had the same similar reaction with performances we did in Actions, didn't we?
Yes, we did. So we were kind of...
We're kind of used to it.
but in a sense, you definitely provoked them, right?
We didn't mean to provoke them.
We just thought it'd be interesting.
Yeah. What we wanted was to present something that they hadn't experienced before, which to us was something exciting, but something very confusing to them.
And their frustration was revealed as violence and animosity rather than curiosity, which to us was surprising. We always found novelty and things we didn't expect exciting and challenging and inspiring. So in our naivety, we thought other people would too. And it took us quite some time to realize that that wasn't the case. A lot of people were determined to try and impose their expectation on us with physical violence if necessary, rather than accept that we were doing something different.
Hmm. You have to remember that English people have been painting their face blue for like 2,000 years. So there's a long tradition of hooliganism. And although I respect tradition now more than I used to, that's not one that I respect.
So what did you consciously do anything sort of towards the end of your early days to deal with that?
We fought back.
You fought back. Did you carry sticks on stage with you?
No,
beat them down?
If somebody threw a chair at us on stage, then was, you know, we'd jump off the stage and throw chairs back.
I was handed I was handed a number to another number to call. Let's try this, 201-209-9368. That might work better. So 201-209-9368. I think we've got some calls now. Let's try this.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, am I on?
You're on the air. Can you all hear them?
Yeah.
Yes, they can hear you.
This is, I mean, you know, I have to say it's such an honor, but I'm just, you know, I just have to say it. But been a fan for 30 years, and
thank
I
you.
Did want, and, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the new recording sounds fantastic, and I'm really sad that I won't actually be able to get my hands on a copy, but perhaps it'll be bootlegged or something like that. and that, I mean, I'm sure
they're happy to hear that.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be, actually, but... But anyway, I did want to, and if there are any openings left on your, on, you know, any slots or dates available, I would highly recommend actually two venues or cities. Austin, Texas, which is where I am, and I guarantee you you'd sell out, but great music town. But also, if you get the chance, go to Port Huron, which is north of Detroit. It's a little, small industrial city where, back in the early 80s, they would sell out of your albums, like clockwork. Very small town, but for some reason, a very sort of a grim town, and for whatever reason, they really
I don't know
were
why
big fans of you guys.
Why is it that we're so popular in these small, grim towns? I don't understand that, really.
We speak the language.
Yes, we used to make pilgrimages up there from Detroit when I was much younger. So,
do you have a proper question?
Yes.
I guess we should say that we don't, unfortunately, have any slots left in this particular event.
Even if I were to say, please come to Austin for the springtime.
Well, that would be lovely, but it won't be this time.
All right.
Okay.
Ask a question.
I don't have a question. I don't. I just wanted to say hey. That's all.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Hey.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye.
What was
You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I'm Chris. From Chicago, and I have a couple questions.
Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Are you there?
Okay, I'm sorry. I've got the phone cut out.
No, go ahead.
No, you're there, all right.
We can hear you.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say I'm a huge fan, and I love you guys so much. But I do have a couple questions. One of my questions is, how does it feel to be kicked out of the Epiphany for your music?
He just changed it to that on the air.
I'm, like, so sad, but... I'm still going.
Oh, good. Did you get a ticket then? Because doesn't matter where it's been changed to, your ticket's still valid.
Okay. So, like, how does it feel then?
Oh, you mean because we were meant to play it at church and we're not playing it now, right?
Yeah, because of the trouble with
the I have to apologize to her. I cut her off the air, but did you get a question out of her?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. If you're still listening, Chris, we'll answer your question. Sorry.
Sorry about that. I accidentally dropped her. Let's. You can call back, and we'll try to get you back on. Let's take another call.
Well, hang on. We didn't answer the question.
Oh, you didn't. Okay.
Hi,
go ahead.
Hello?
No. You all.
Hello.
Let's just say quickly. Hi. Just call it new caller. Just hang on one sec. For Chris, okay. The reason that the venue changed in Chicago, I think, was as a consequence of a problem some of the parishioners at the church in Chicago had with the concept of us playing, because it's still a church that's in use, and it used to be always that we would play in churches that were deconsecrated because for some reason that was more acceptable, but that particular church is still active, and my understanding is that the priest and the the people who are in charge of the church had no problem, but there was just some technical issues with the parishioners. So personally, I like playing in churches because they have such bad acoustics.
Okay. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
How's everybody doing?
Fine, thank you.
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm calling from Florida. It's glad to see you guys on the road again. Unfortunately, I won't be able to come see you because of my job, but kind of bummed about that.
Well, all of the shows will be available just directly after we finish the tour from www.throbbing-gristle.com as downloads.
Awesome.
So if you can download from us rather than from a Juarez site or something, that would be great.
Oh, I definitely will, Peter. I got your Desert Shore and 32nd Annual Report.
Oh,
top
wow.
Top notch.
Cool.
Good.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. I have two questions, and I'll let somebody else talk to you.
Go ahead.
Now that we're all down the road a little bit, do you guys consider yourself in the fraternity of British psychedelic bands?
British what?
Psychedelic bands.
No.
Well, I do, but then I'm always the odd one out, aren't I? In the sense of taking jamming, taking sort of improvising and trance and rhythm and spinning in sounds and images, whether they're verbal or literal, then there's a certain linkage with psychedelic music in that sense.
Okay.
But in terms of what people would normally think of as psychedelic music and its lineage, then obviously not. So we kind of like a hard-edged... toughened up titanium version of psychedelic.
We lack a trippy element of the psychedelic.
I would disagree with that. I think that the Throbbing Gristle is amazingly appropriate, if somewhat scary, for people that are used to the psychedelic experience. The number of people that write to us, or to me certainly, and say, I first heard this record when I was on 10 whatever grams of this or that.
LSD or something.
Right. To me, it's totally scary.
I wouldn't recommend that.
But at the same time, I think part of the Throbbing Gristle experience is a kind of altered state, both for us and for the audience. And consequently... I think you could describe us definitely as a psychedelic band, but not in the sense of music to listen to when you want to take drugs. Much more in the sense of music that arises out of an alternate.
I understand. Well, I consider Wolfi psychedelic. So what do I know?
But, sure.
All right. Well, thanks for your question. I'm going to move on.
I have one more quick question.
Quickly.
If I could. Peter, is the Coiled video box ever going to come out?
Yes, I promise. I'll steel myself to do it as soon as I get these more important things out of the way.
We know he's doing it because we were in Bangkok with ZZ about 3 weeks ago and he was working on it. So it is being done.
There you go.
Awesome.
All
okay,
right.
Cheers,
thank
everybody.
You. Bye. FMU, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. This is Mike in Chicago.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Yeah.
And really looking forward to show next week Saturday.
Cool.
And I'm really interested in the manufacture of electronic musical equipment, circuit bending. So I was kind of curious, how much has your electronic kit evolved from what you were using back in the 70s to what you're going to be bringing on this show now?
It's changed totally. The stuff we used to use in the 70s was very circuit bent and homemade, but the stuff we're using now is pretty much off the shelf material. Although we do have some bespoke synth gadgets, much of it, it's not circuit bent, is it, Sleazy?
Well, we do. You and I both enjoy finding obscure boffins who work for the Ministry of Defence in the daytime.
Sure.
What's that about?
Well, no, we can't say. If we tell you, we have to kill you.
Okay. Well, I tell you what.
If you don't hear me on the air next week, you'll know why.
We know what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're really looking forward to you. Thanks for making Chicago on your stop, and we'll catch you at the show.
It's a pleasure. It's going to be really good.
Are you aware it's now at the Logan Square Auditorium?
Yes, yeah. We got the announcement that it's at Logan Square. There's it's really some great restaurants. It's a neat auditorium to perform in, and some good bars nearby. So it's perfect. So we're catching the 7 p.m. show with
get some of that Chicago deep dish pizza to get fat on.
Mm, oh yes, of course. Good.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
FMU, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Good. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Fine. Fine.
Good. Going to see you tomorrow night. Two easy questions. Are you going to be documenting all this stuff you're doing in the U.S.?
Constantly.
I would assume so. Video?
Not so much video. A lot of snapshots and...
Some of the shows are being filmed, I think, but...
On the West Coast, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And ever thought of doing any cover songs?
Cover songs?
Well, funny you should, say that.
I mean,
just curious, like Britney or something.
Well, they're doing Nico's Desert Shore.
Right.
Oh, yes, right. I saw that, the installation 12 CD thing. But
well, we will eventually make that into a proper album that follows the same path as the Nico original album, but interpreted in a different way.
Right.
But in due course, I don't know when.
Okay.
Sounds good. I'll see you guys tomorrow night.
Thank you.
Take FMU, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yeah.
First of all, Cozy, saw your exhibit at the Vancouver Art Gallery just months ago. Thank you. It had some people up in arms, as always. question is... In an old early issue of Industrial News, you guys had, you announced that you had tactics for the first four albums, namely Second Annual Report was propaganda, DOA was discipline, 20 Jesuit Greats was camouflage, and Heathen Earth was ritual. Is there a tactic behind this album and tour?
I thought these were easy questions.
That's a really good question. Wow. Made us all wake up.
Is there a strategy? Is there ever a strategy?
This time there's no strategy. You know, sometimes no sense makes sense, as they say. Mm-hmm. So this is exploration. Let's just say that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Thanks. FMU, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Hello, four beautiful people. You're all just so beautiful. We love you all.
What is your question, sir?
So beautiful of you. This is the question.
Okay.
In turn, each of you, how did your work with other bands outside of Throbbing Gristle, which obviously I don't have to name, how did that affect the music and relationship, musical relationship that you now have in Throbbing Gristle? How did it change the music? What did you learn?
Jen?
Oh. to relax and actually enjoy singing instead of being afraid that somebody would notice that we weren't really a singer.
Sleazy.
I would say to feel that I had the freedom to play notes if I wanted to. I think in the beginning it was... I was intimidated, I think, by the nature of tuning. But I think that one thing that Coyle taught me was not to be afraid of tuning, and that it didn't mean that I was going to... I wasn't selling out by having something, you know, in an even-tempered pitch.
Well, you have a great ear for melody, Sleazy.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've only gotten better, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah. How about Cozy? Cozy, what do you think?
Well, I did a lot of vocals when we became Chris and Cozy, so that's very different to what I do in TG. And I really enjoyed that and the freedom it gave me. But also, I think, because I still played a lot of guitar and cornet, then I got to know both instruments much more than I ever thought I would do, to be honest. And I've become really comfortable with them both. But I don't try and do anything. I'm still very free with what I do, and I've always retained that. It's just that sometimes Chris and Sleazy, funny enough, having said what you said, do go on about keys and Minors and majors and
secrets.
Yeah, so.
Hey, well, you're as good as Sid Barrett now, so you got something going on.
Well, I don't even know what they're talking about, and I want to stay like that.
Me too.
Well, it's very free. It's very free. What you've done now with a guitar. You're an excellent guitar player, even though whatever you couldn't play Freebird.
There's no need. Somebody else already played it, so it's fine.
It's very well, for someone else, but yeah. And Chris.
I think working with other people just expands your horizons, and it allowed me to experiment in different directions than I would experimenting within CG. And what she said.
Well, you certainly got to explore your predisposition for something like ABBA with, very melodic synth pop, which is, of course, withstood the test of time just as much as they have.
Oh, great.
Mamma Mia.
It's interesting.
Mamma Mia. You guys are beautiful, by the way. And Sleazy, I owe you a Japanese dinner, by the way.
You do?
Yes, I do.
I'll take it.
Is that a euphemism?
It is. No. I promised him in Bangkok I'd buy him Japanese food. And
hey, how are you? I didn't know it was
beautiful.
You.
I'll see you tomorrow night, you beautiful people.
See you tomorrow.
Okay.
Interesting, Fabio, that we all said we feel more...